This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, I'll start us off. Thanks very much. This is the meeting of SubPro, that's the subsequent procedure for new GTLD's work team number 4, IDN's Technical and Operations Group, on the 14th of December 2016 at 2000 UTC. On today's call, we have an agenda already sent out, and Rubens will be taking the lion's share of today because I've been way too busy and too distracted and have left him very much alone for today's call. So my preemptive apologies for having abandoned Rubens in the last week, and my thanks to him for having carried the load. First of all, I'd like to ask, is there anyone who is not in the Adobe Connect room and who is only on the audio channel?
Not hearing anyone or seeing anybody in the ABC room indicating that they know of someone who's only on dial-in. We will take the attendance from the Adobe Connect room. It's not a huge attendance, but these things happen apparently at the start of the year. I'd like to ask now, are there any updates to statements of interest? Not hearing anybody or seeing anyone wave their attention in the Adobe Connect room, we will move on to a little bit of tiny housekeeping, which I all too frequently forget to tell you about at the beginning of one of our calls, and that is that we would appreciate if when you speak, you identify yourself for the transcript record, and that you speak relatively slowly and clearly if possible. And if you can mute your microphone when you're not speaking, that will help reduce background noise. So with that, I'll just very briefly ask, is there anybody who wishes to now let us know of any other business they might wish to raise at the end of the call? That's another no, in which case I am going to hand over to Ruben to take us through our Hyderabad recap. Thank you, Ruben.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you. I just give some more seconds so some people that have requested dial-outs, they can join the audio bridge. They're currently very low on attendance, so in order to not cancel this meeting, which I prefer not to. It seems that Alan is now with us, so we'll now proceed. Next slide, please. We today started by welcoming opening remarks, sorry, today, which I have already done, then do a bit of recap from the face-to-face meeting in Hyderabad, then go to discussion teams that came out from the Hyderabad meeting regarding technical evaluation and financial evaluation. So next slide, please. Next. Yes, here it is. Thank you. In Hyderabad, we had the face-to-face meeting of the full subsequent procedures work group, not only work track 4, but all work tracks and the full work group. But in this specific part of the session dedicated to work track 4 matters, we had three discussion topics. One that dominated that part of the meeting was discussing technical and financial competence, whether we evaluate that before or after application. And that's where the discussion teams for this meeting came from. So we'll be looking at this in more detail in the following section. So we'll focus on the other teams now. We also have discussed IDNs, whether to support IDN via TLDs, and if supporting that, if some bundling requirements would be in place or not. We also discussed one-charted TLDs in scripts where one charter actually means one word, like Chinese and some other scripts. And that discussion had opposition to that from to using that for Latin and Cyrillic scripts. We also have a mention of requiring consent for IBM ccTLDs, but that is outside of the mission of the subsequent procedures work group and outside the mission of DNSSO itself. And it didn't have a comment on whether we should prioritize or not IBM application. We also discussed reserved names and name collisions, notably the interaction between the ICANN application process, the GTLD application process, and an IFF process for applying for special use name registries, which is described in one of the RFC documents that's listed in this slide. We discussed that some of the high-risk strings from this round, at home.mayo.corp, and how we could identify new possibilities of high risk for subsequent procedures. And we had a mention or a discussion of what happens when the current control interruption system that is planned to only run for 2 years after delegation of its things, but we still have delegations happening and you have delegations almost for about 6 months or so yet. So these are the overall themes we had from Hyderabad. So we have Alan to comment on this recap. Go on, Alan.
Thank you. Just a comment on the second bullet under IDNs. The support for one-character names was in pictogram-type language scripts where a single character represents a word, and specifically that's in Chinese, Japanese, and Korean, or some Korean. But the opposition was not Latin and Cyrillic. The opposition was in traditional single, you know, character-based languages. So there's many different languages other than Cyrillic was one of the examples given because someone had said we don't want single Cyrillic letters as TLDs, but that was just an example. There are many, many different scripts that are letter-based and would not be supported. So we shouldn't be highlighting Latin and Cyrillic, but using a more generic term.
Thank you, Alan. Probably be good to have generic terms for both Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and Latin and Cyrillic, and so forth. That's
even Japanese
would be fine.
Yeah, even Japanese and Korean, there are particular scripts within Japanese and Korean which are phonetic based, and those are, we're only talking about the ones where they represent a whole word.
Yeah, moving on, if you are Japanese example, they have a letter-based, which is katakana, and a phoneme, which is hiragana, and they have kanji. So you could probably think of three levels of descriptive scripts. Next we have Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Thanks, Rubens. This is Steve from staff. And actually, I just want to note a couple of things. Actually, one is that Phil noted that you're rather faint, and I actually kind of agree. I had to put on headphones just to make sure I was hearing everything you're saying. So if you could speak up, that would be great. The second thing I want to raise is that for the first bullet underneath IDNs related to IDN variant TLDs, I just wanted to mention that I've had some very introductory discussions with Sarmat Hussein, who manages the IDN program as inclusive of variants. So if we have particular questions that the work track would want to ask him, or if you'd like him to participate in a call and perhaps provide background or a status update of the program, I think he'd be willing to do so. So if there is interest in that, I think I can reach out to him and see if he'd like to participate. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. I think Dharma Dorfer is welcome when needed. So no other questions. So we move on to our first discussion today. So next and then next slide, please. One of the good things we have in our discussion with Hyderabad was what appeared at the time as consensus. So the idea is to verify if such consensus is really there. So as this will be the first consensus call we'll be doing, we like to recap that we have previously defined that every consensus call will be made in at least two meetings, not only one. So this is not the talk now or hold your peace kind of thing. This is only the first. This will be whatever we define will be communicated to the mailing list, will be subject to discussion in another call. And we still be subject to change by the work track if new information arises, if new concepts appear, and we will still be subject to the full work group decision. So this is not final in any way. But this subject is possibly one that will help other work tracks in defining what they do, notably work track one. So these are the ones that we could define our in final as some guidance to other work tracks. So the discussion we had in Hyderabad was whether applicants should demonstrate their technical capability at application time. Let's say the applicant would already need to have that capability before applying, and that will be evaluated, or if that technical capability could be shown before contract signing time. So after applicant has other criteria like financial evaluation, geographic evaluation, any other evaluation, then possibly setting up the contention set, but possibly prevailing in the contention set, only at that time it would be required to show technical capability. This is pretty much in line with experience from this round, where it was shown that technical capability can be hired in the market. So in previous rounds, like 2000, 2004, that wasn't that clear that someone could outsource its entire heavy operator to a technical backend. Now it has become clear to the community that it's something that can happen. So the idea is to change one of the policy recommendations to highlight that can be possible. So are we, what recommendations? 7.6. Applicants must be able to demonstrate their technical capability to run a heavy operation for the purpose that the applicant sets out. And what I wrote as possible language would be applicants must be able to demonstrate the technical capability to run a heavy operation for the purpose that the applicant sets out, but will only be required to do so at contract signing time after passing other criteria and more approvals and prevailing in contention sets, if any. This is an addition from Avery in the chat that we can surely incorporate. So the discussion is, does that really reflect work group consensus is that people really think that. So that's the idea of discussion. That's the idea, what we are asking. Any thoughts on that?
Ruben's Cheryl here. Avery's made a suggestion in the chat. I certainly think it's a friendly amendment to add an if any at the end of the proposed as a possible language set.
Yep, that's a friendly amendment. It's friendly accepted because it makes perfect sense. So while people think like, oh, we have one hand, please go ahead.
Thanks, Ruben. So this is Steve again from staff. So Ruben and I had a little bit of discussion on this offline, and so I thought it might be useful if it was a little more well-documented what the problem statement might be, as well as showing perhaps what other options might have considered, the impacts and such that might arise from this potential recommendation. So I know you verbalized it just now, but I think it might be helpful, you know, if we end up doing a consensus call over email to have a little bit more of that full story documented and present for WorkTrack members to see and take into account when they're making their decision. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve, fully noted. While people were typing, I just asked a show of hands in Adobe Connect for people that are on Adobe Connect if they agree in changing the policy that's going to be written in this way.
Ruben, Cheryl here. Of course, this is just a temperature taking of the room today. This is not a consensus call, of course, because we don't have sufficient people either in the call and we would have to take it to the list anyway. But as a temperature taking exercise, if you raise your hands, please.
So let's ask who disagrees. Everybody who disagrees, please disagree as well.
Avery, you've got your hand up. Did you want to say something on this matter, please? Go ahead.
Yep. I figured I might as well, since we have so much silence to continue with. This is Avery. Yeah, I mean, I think that Steve makes a good point that explaining why the change is being made. I think it's a very reasonable change. I think, you know, the expense, I think the change of conditions, I think the stuff that may be coming out of RSPs, and especially if we end up making a decision that one can actually pick their, and we haven't yet, but one can pick their back-end provider later, you know, depending upon what happens with the whole RSP thing. I think it's good to lay out those conditions because all those conditions do make this make a lot of sense. And in fact, for it to make no sense to test as part of initial or intermediary. So I think it's a good idea. I do think we need a second reading after an interval on the list. Hopefully we'll have more people involved in it. But I do agree about the whole explanatory content being added. Thanks.
Phil, Cheryl here for the record. Did you want to make your statement rather than have it in the chat? I mean, it's not as if we've got a terribly long queue here. If you've got audio, feel free to read it to the record if you'd like. Okay, Phil doesn't have his audio, so I might take the opportunity of reading it to the record. This is Cheryl Langdonor speaking on behalf of Phil Buckingham, whose comment in chat is as follows. This is a catch-22. Since the technical costs slash so contractual relationships with the back-end provider will need to be incurred and the costs put in financial model for evaluation. That's the end of that. Avery's just making a comment that the silence is all pervasive here on the AC, but that seems to be somewhat common across a number of our groups today, or in recent times. Back to you, Ruben.
I think Avery has to... Yes, her hand.
Yeah, I put my hand back up again.
Oh, sorry, I missed that while I was reading the chat. Go ahead, Avery.
That's okay. I put my hand up to respond to that. I think the financial model and the testing the technical model are two different things. I mean, obviously, they're two different things. And so one can have within the financial model, you know, their estimate of that, and those judging the financial models will judge whether that's too low or high enough. And so I don't actually see it as a catch. I think one, does their accounting, does their projections, you know, they're not going to have bought equipment if they necessarily are doing it in-house themselves, if it's going to take 2 years. There's any number of things that happen during the application process. So I think that the financial model can be judged separately as long as there's an adequate estimate and an explanation of that estimate. But that's the financial model. That's not the technical testing. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. I think we have more discussions to have. Ask staff to move to the next slide, please. Next slide, please. So, when are the discussion team gathered from our meeting in Hyderabad? It's not something that we already reached the maturity level of being called consensus call, so this is not one. But what I got from Hyderabad that people would like technical evaluation to be performed as aggregated and or consolidated as feasible, whether it implies or not having a registry service provider program, which is a different thing which is being discussed in work track one and being discussed between contracted parties and ICANN and staff for the current round registries. But one of the things that I have tried to do was find why this was done like this in the 2012 round. And I couldn't find one. So I missed what was the rationale, what was the idea behind evaluating every application, even when they are repeated for themselves. So first, it's actually a call for help. Say, hey, does anyone know any motivation, any rationale of why this was done that way? So, because such rationale could provide an argument against doing that, so we should look into this. So, does anybody have any idea whatsoever on why it was done this way? So, if anybody could rise up or speculate. No takers? Kurt, please go ahead.
Hi, I hope you can hear me. I'm talking on my phone. Can you hear me okay?
A bit faint, but you can hear, okay. Good.
Well, assuming that you can, the reason that the technical evaluations weren't aggregated was that there was no idea at the, you know, my recollection is that there was no idea at the time that the market would shake out the way it did. The that there would be, you know, 10 or so back-end providers. Then it was thought just as likely as that each applicant might do their own back-end. And there's an additional thought that if we evaluated, if every application was evaluated, it might encourage the startup of new backends or new technical providers. So really, there, it was without the realization that the market would consolidate the way it has. And I think, you know, the approach is right to understand now that the market has developed in a very certain way where backend provisions are more or less of a commodity, and to approach the application process with that knowledge.
Thank you, Kurt. That makes perfect sense. Any other one with some recollection would like to add to that? While people think of that, I would just read what I mentioned as possible language. The technical evaluation may be aggregated and or consolidated to the maximum extent possible that generates process efficiencies, including both different applications from the same applicant and different applications sharing a common technical infrastructure. That would cover said registry service provider or back-end accreditation scenarios or not. That would be general enough, and you probably need to be reconciled with WorkTrack 1 work, that it's probably not prone to generating compatibility just to expand possibilities. Steve mentioned in the chat that for his recollection, one of the reasons why every application was considered individually was related to principles of fairness. And he mentioned that Chris could fact check you. Possibly fairness would come into play if that plays a long factor in making the cost different. Since that was no different cost figure, it would probably be equally fair aggregating or not. That's just my opinion. Fields typing, so if people are not willing to speak, we'll wait for them to type. Kurt, if you're still on the line, could you answer Steve, if you are able to, about principles of fairness applying to the decision?
Kurt, are you able to respond in chat to Steve's question? If not, audio.
Hi, Rubens. This is Steve from staff. I would note that Kurt responded in the chat or noted that he did not hear the question.
I think it would be easier for Kurt to read your question in the chat since he's being able to read the chat. I don't know if he's been able to respond due to this connectivity situation.
It's sure, here's the record. Kurt, did you hear that more clearly this time? It was in fact the question at the end that Steve raised about whether or not you'd be able to, you would be able to fact check the statement that Steve made in chat about fairness. That's what Ruben's asked you to respond to. So it's in writing, so you can probably, even with a bad connection, respond in writing as well. Thanks.
Hi, this is me. I apologize for inconveniencing everybody. So, of course, I would hope that I can ascribe to principles of fairness. And, certainly along with the uncertainty about how the market would shake out and there would be relatively few back-end providers, it was also not fully anticipated that there would be portfolio applicants where there could be economies of scale in doing the technical evaluations, even if there were different applicants. Even one applicant had many applications. And then additionally, there wasn't a lot of thought given to registry operators switching back-end providers and there being this sort of competitive marketplace that's developed. So, Certainly, it was thought at the outset that every application was going to be an individual, very special TLD and not sort of a portfolio applicant. So, again, I think the things you're talking about here are exactly on the right track because the market's developed and now we have knowledge that we didn't have before. So,
sure. Well, thanks for that, Kurt. And I assume that everyone's was able to hear that response as well. That it's all about, what we've learned and how things were predicted and didn't work out as predicted, which is why we're really doing this whole exercise, isn't it? Back to you, Ruben.
Thank you, Chair. So I'll ask staff to move to our next discussion topic. Next slide, please. So when we discussed in Hyderabad, applying the same idea of post-application for financial evaluation, the answer was not in support of that. So I tried to understand better why that is. And one thing that I realized was that applicant guidebook essentially prescribed a business model that was revenue generating or at least self-sustainable. So it only mentioned that registry revenues would pay either for its own operations or its own operations plus profit for profit-making organizations. And that's not how it went. We had a lot of applications, actually more applications where the registry was a cost center, where mostly brands had a TLD to operate without making the revenue from that directly. Of course, brand protection and brand value are part of strategy for many companies, but it's not because they are a registry. They are not charging people from getting those domains. They might be getting some more business out of that, notably if you put domains for your resellers, so you might still get some direct positive revenue out of that, or not. So that's a business model that wasn't considered in applicant card book. But besides that, looking at only one application at a time overlooked that there would possibly be some shared resources, shared constraints that would be applied for the TLDs. So if, for instance, if a TLD requires working capital, if an applicant wins 10,000 TLDs, it will need to share that working capital among that amount of TLDs. And that's something that wasn't considered in the application. That's something that could possibly allow gaming the system, like applying to many TLDs that you think will be applied for and try to get a settlement for in private contention sets, private auctions for contention sets, or simply getting your hand on that many TLDs you can and sell them later, like a domaining kind of thing applied to TLDs. So this was also overlooked in a system that only assessed application by application. So one idea that could answer to those concerns raised during a face-to-face meeting would be to change the financial criteria to be assessed for all applications instead of single applications. And the criteria would be all applications that would become part of a single registry family. ICANN has a criteria today that where they define what is a registry family. For instance, if you look at donuts is not a single legal entity. They have a number of legal entities, and those legal entities are owned by other legal entities, but they end up being owned by donuts, and this is recorded as such the registry web page. So there is a criteria to aggregate financially registry that even they are the same legal entity. So what possible language would be to include that, and that would keep financial evaluation as a gauging factor, as in something that would be assessed the application, and only by passing financial evaluation you could move on in the process. So the question for this topic is whether this makes sense or not. This is not exactly what was mentioned, but this was more like a logical consequence of what was raised in our face-to-face meeting. Phil Buckingham already made a comment in the chat that the financial model was templated, standardized. It won't work for round two, that each applicant's financial model needs to be treated separately, evaluated, and do things accordingly. And that's possibly something that ICANN staff won't like to hear your suggestion to, because that would make for a much harder evaluation than they did this time. But if this is needed, then it's needed. But it's possibly not as line mass produced as was the one that they did in 2012. So maybe people in favor, opposition, people that like, people that dislike this idea. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, it's not opposition, but just a comment. At the second level, we have many people in this market who buy domain names not to use them, but on the hope that they can resell them or somehow other gain, make financial gain from the fact that they own them. That's been done to some extent at the first level, that there are there's been a fair amount of movement of who owns the domain names after the application. And I suspect going forward, there's going to be a lot more of that, you know, especially as we lower the cost. We're going to have speculative applications where they never intend to run it. So although I have no problem saying you better be able to demonstrate you will be able to run it even if you don't intend to, just to note that the financial models that people are going to have are going to vary even more, especially if the price goes down. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Next is Steve.
Thanks, Rubens. This is Steve Chan again from staff, and you know, I don't have an opinion on your question, of course, but I did want to just remind everyone, or I guess plug the program implementation review report that staff produced. It might provide some insight on this conversation. So in the report, they note, for instance, that at the minimum, there were inefficiencies from treating every application individually, but they also note what I think you mentioned, that you lose some of the effectiveness in reviewing everyone individually. You don't look at, I guess, the applicant and their full portfolio of domains. So you lose some of the effectiveness, but you also lose efficiency as well. So just, I guess, a plug for that report that the work track might want to consider the findings from that in their consideration. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. But I would add to that that while this discussion came about because of discussion efficiencies or inefficiencies of the program, what was raised in Hyderabad was that this go beyond efficiency. This goes to the point of actually knowing whether people could apply for a specific amount of TLDs, like 10,000. So whether we next question their motive is, so hey, they only applying to sell later, the financial evaluation has to say whether that applicant could in reality run 10,000 TLDs. There are some organizations that could be able to get it. There are some that would not. So what you're mentioning here goes to whether this actually would work. So this could evaluate whether this is feasible, and that could generate risks to registrants, to register domains in TLDs that are not sustainable because the applicant has applied for too many. So while it started as an efficiency discussion, it was reversed into more of a stability of the domain system discussion. I think you can continue later, but you mentioned that the report acknowledges those challenges to some degree. Any other comments on this? Or this is definitely not maturity level for doing consensus discussions, but that was the first problem of what we discussed in Hyderabad for that. Any ideas or shall we give ourselves back some minutes of our time? Let's just wait a bit to see if anybody has any thoughts on that. Hearing none, I would ask staff if they could tell us what would be next work track for meeting in our agenda, work track for meeting of 2017. Any takers?
Ruben, Cheryl here. I thought that we had another call scheduled for next week, on the Thursday of next week, because this week's call is actually a postponement of last week's call. So I thought on our normal cycle we did in fact have scheduled another call for next week. Now, I'm perfectly happy to poll the group and to see whether they want to have that call next week. But I do believe we had one last for 2016 meeting scheduled for next week, which I think would be probably 0500 UTC on the Thursday. Steve, you've got your hand up. You probably have the exact information at your fingertips.
Thank you, Cheryl. This is Steve Chan from staff, and yeah, I was busy looking that up. So there is one additional call for 2016 scheduled for this work track. It is 22 December at 0300 UTC. So Thursday for some, and then Wednesday evening or Wednesday for some others. So thanks.
Thanks, Steve. So I guess, Ruben, what we need to do now is establish with at least the group here and then to check with the list whether or not they are wanting to have that call next week. It certainly is scheduled. I'm happy to have it, and we can further this material a little bit more. But I might let you see what the group says about that. Over to you, Ruben.
Yes, Cheryl. Let's do some checking on the mailing list and see what people think of having or not having the call. I need to say that staff has been really worried about progress of many work tracks, including our own, through the topics we have to make. So any meeting we lose, we get a bit further from what from our goals, but we already have these with very low attendance, so we need to figure out how to progress in these conditions. But let's have the discussion on the list. Cheryl?
Thanks, Ruben. Just took me a moment to come off mute. I don't know about everyone else, but the audio for me wasn't particularly clear for some of what you were saying. So please let me know if I'm not paraphrasing you correctly here. I think I heard that we will take the question of whether we hold the call as planned next week, 0300 UTC on the 22nd, to the list, and that we will also ask the list for feedback and further discussion on what we've done today. Now, if that is the case, and if I am paraphrasing you anywhere nearly correctly, then I would like to make a small embellishment on what you've said, and that is that perhaps where we've had some small addition and some annotations to the material that we've discussed today in terms of proposed language, for example, that we make those changes on the presentation that was run today, and that we also send the presentation as edited then, along with the notes from today's call, to try and encourage the list to do that discussion. So that would be an action item from my perspective. And with that, I'm going to have a slightly noisier environment in a minute, so I'm going to hand it back to you to perhaps wrap up the call for today. I will come back in just before we close, though. Back to you, Ruben.
Thanks, Cheryl. So, having nothing further to discuss, I was going to do, but Phil Buckingham is typing. Unless it cuts really fast, and just close this meeting and see you all at our next meeting, whenever that happens. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sorry, I had to switch phones. The battery had eventually run out on the handset I was using earlier. So I was actually, I actually missed a small part of what was just said. But we only have about 6 minutes to the top of the hour. So I'm assuming that Ruben did close off and that we said, all the very best for the season to everybody, and we'll do more on the list. So that's the case. Bye for now.